Hi, I'm Emily Rawlings.
And I'm Kayla Connick. Welcome to Forget Dis, taking the dis out of disabilities.
We are music therapists from Dynamic Music Therapy in Las Vegas, Nevada. This podcast highlights people who live with unique challenges that they have transformed. We will meet people from different walks of life, discuss how music therapy can help in specific ways, and present how to and how not to talk to people with disabilities.
In this episode, we're going to explore what it's like living as someone who is visually impaired and learn how to talk to people who are blind because, believe it or not, many sighted people have no clue. In fact, overall, recent studies have revealed that when surveyed, 67% of people feel very uncomfortable talking to people with disabilities. So we would really like to see that change. Before we move on to the interview, I want to explain that there are varying degrees of visual impairment ranging from low vision to total blindness. So quote-unquote normal vision was defined by Herman Snellen as 20/20 vision, just to give you an idea. Moderate visual impairment ranges from 20/70 to 20/160. Severe is classified as 20/200 to 20/400. And profound is 20/500 to 20/1000. So as you can see, visual impairment isn't really a functional definition. It's just a classification system. Now, there's also kind of this assumption, too, that people that are legally blind or have visual impairment live in this type of blackness that kind of reminds me of when someone who's sighted closes their eyes, and what they perceive is this darkness that sighted people kind of assume, well, maybe that's what it's like to be blind, to see what I see when I close my eyes. But that's just not true. Only really in the case of somebody who is totally blind, they do not have any light perception. Most people who have visual impairment actually do have light perception. So only about 15% of people with visual impairment are totally blind with no light perception. Just some things to keep in mind today. Now, I am really excited to talk with and learn from two guys with visual impairments who are here to tell us, simply put, how to talk to blind dudes.
So today we are joined by John Rawlings and Brett Silver. Brett Silver, what a cool name.
Oh, thank you.
I wish I had the last name.
Somebody told me it sounds like a country singer or something.
I thought just like actor. It reminds me of like, oh.
Alright, I'll take that. An actor?
Yeah. Country singer, do you like country?
I do. I like country. Well, I like all kinds of music, so, you know. Yeah. I mean, but yeah, country's definitely in there as a favorite of mine.
What's your favorite?
Oh, God. You can't, you know what? You can't really... With music, that's like saying, what's your favorite food?
Same thing. Favorite child.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, who's your favorite child, you know? Like, for me, I'm like, there's so many different, like, if somebody were to ask me my favorite song, same thing. I don't really have a favorite song or a favorite. It's just there's so much good stuff I like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, but anyway. So.
What about you, John? What's your favorite kind of music?
I can listen to a lot of stuff, but... Probably New Age is where I started, and it's what I listen to the most. Instrumental New Age. Some 80s rock, the good stuff like Journey. I like Journey quite a bit.
Cool. Which is pretty cool to me that he likes instrumental, because we learned in the last episode that's what I like is instrumental. Mm-hmm. And by the way, John Rawlings is my husband.
Hi.
Yeah.
And John and I go way back, by the way. I mean, we go way back like the seats in a Fleetwood Cadillac, you know? So we're talking, you know, preschool is how far we go back.
Wow.
So, yeah, we've known each other for quite a while.
That's a long time keep that relationship going.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I'm the only new friend here.
Yeah, you're new to the club. Well,
I'm new to the club, yeah.
So tell us a little bit about yourselves.
Okay. Well, for me, I've been blind since birth, and I was born here in Las Vegas. It's actually kind of funny because my parents and John's parents were very instrumental in starting the what was called the Friends for the Visually Handicapped. And it was a program kind of to allow blind and visually impaired students not just to go to camp or to go to Disneyland and do social things, but also to, you know, be mainstreamed in mainstream school. So instead of having a school for the blind, which, I mean, if you want me to launch into a rant about that, I can. But, you know, instead of having the school for the blind set up, now it's kind of the best of both worlds because you're mainstream, but yet you still have all the resources available to you that you would need to be able to function in a mainstream classroom. Mm-hmm. So that's how John and I met. And yeah, I'm basically, now I work for the Talking Book Library. I'm the outreach coordinator. And I go out to, you know, assisted living facilities, schools, health fairs, things like that, just to promote awareness about the Talking Book program. So that's pretty much what I do. And I live alone, and I have my own place. So
cool. We're really excited to have you with us today.
Yeah, I'm excited to be with you guys.
I was also born here. I lost my vision when I was about 21 months. To a rare form of encephalitis that landed me in a coma for about 6 weeks. And when it was all said and done, the infection had damaged the visual cortex in the brain. So my eyes work properly, but the message gets messed up when it goes to the brain. So I see things, I've been told that the way I see things is, if we're both standing 10 feet away from something, to you it looks like 10 feet away. To me it looks more like 50 or 60 feet away. So things appear further away than they actually are. My level of vision is bad enough. There's no car driving, there's no reading standard print or facial recognition. But I also don't need a guide dog or a cane most of the time either. So I would consider myself pretty high functioning.
And raising kids, man.
I have been through a culinary program at Le Cordon Bleu. It's very sad that they've closed all the campuses. Worked in the industry for a little while, and now I am stay-at-home dad to the two most awesome little girls there are on earth.
Oh. Awesome.
They are sweet.
They definitely are, but there is absolutely no bias here. I don't know.
Absolutely not. No. We have mom and dad sitting right here.
That's right. They're at grandma's house, and they're happy.
Oh, that's where they went today.
Yeah, they're
at
grandma's house. Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we're really excited to have you help us learn how to talk to blind dudes.
Well, you know what's funny about that? Is it's interesting that you have to even do something like this where, you know what I mean? Like the fact that you need to stop and educate the public. Now, here's my big thing that I always say, because people say, well, you know, you got to understand they haven't been around someone blind. Well, I'll put the shoe on the other foot and say, you got to understand when I was growing up, and John, I'm assuming it's probably the same for you, everybody who was around me kind of knew my limitations and capabilities. So there was never any questioning. It wasn't until I always joke that I didn't know I was blind until I graduated college because, you know, once I graduated, that's when I started to deal with some hardcore discrimination. And for me, I think, you know, dealing with some of the stuff that sighted people do and say, I've gotten more of that now that I'm older than I did when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah? Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. So, whereas when I was younger, you know, I mean, you didn't run into that very often. It was seemed like I said, all your teachers and friends and family kind of knew what you were capable of doing, you know, so they never questioned you.
You know, I always found it interesting when I was growing up with kids can be really brutal to each other all the time, but I never got it with my disability at all.
See, and that's it too. Every once in a while there was something, but those were very isolated, you know, whereas opposed to now, it seems like it's almost every day, you know, that you deal with some form of, sighted person's behavior.
So give us an example.
Oh, how much time you got?
Examples, plural.
How much time you got? Well, you know, I've had everything from people talking to me like a little kid. Matter of fact, I had a paratransit driver. Paratransit is a door-to-door bus service for people with disabilities. And I had a paratransit driver one time. Actually, this was right here at my work. And he gets off the bus and asks me my name. And, I tell him and everything. So as I'm stepping off the curb, he goes, "Steppy down."
Oh, Lord.
And I stopped. I said, did you just say, I started laughing. I said, did you just say step me down? And he goes, well, yeah. And I said, bro, you don't have to talk to me that way. I'm a 42-year-old man. And he's like, well, how else am I supposed to tell you there's a curb there? And I'm like, just like you tell anybody else who's able
to
see.
Hey, there's a curb there. Yeah, that's exactly.
So, yeah, I've had a lot of weird and then, you know, strange questions about. Now, here's the thing, too. If you're going to ask a question, you know, it's fine. We're not going to rip your throat out if you ask us a question. The problem is when the question is loaded with assumption. So I've actually had people say to me before, like, I'll give you an example of a good one and I'll give you an example of a bad one. A good one is, so how do you organize your money? That's a legitimate question. But now a dumb question would be, how do you organize your money? Does your mom do it for you? So those are examples of good and bad questions to ask, you know?
Definitely. Oh, gosh.
So.
I like that. Hey, John, what are some of the dumbest questions that you've been asked?
It happens so often with me, it's hard to remember them all. I was telling Emily on the way over here, one of the dumbest things that people with regular vision will harp on once in a while is if a blind person uses the word see.
Oh, yeah.
It's like somehow we're not supposed to use that word, and if we do, it's some kind of a silly little pun that the sight person's supposed to laugh at. So I'll say something like, so you see down at the end of the hall, and someone starts snickering like it's funny. The blind person used the word see. Little things like that. Little things like that are what kind of get to me.
It's not your vocabulary to say see, look, or watch, right?
Yeah, that's where apparently where there's a handful, not all of them, but some people with normal vision will tend to think that there's something odd about a blind person using visually descriptive words.
Yeah, that is strange. Like, ooh, you said watch. Like, okay. And I'll get that a lot. Or people will correct themselves. You know, like one time I was on an airplane and I was standing by the back door, I guess, waiting to get off or something. And I was like, oh, what's this here? Is that a light? You know, it was a little circle in the door. And the flight attendant goes, well, no, it's just a thing you could look at. And she stops herself real quick. And I'm like, are we serious? You know? So, yeah, I get a lot of that same kind of thing, too. Saying see, look, or watch, and all of a sudden it's the funniest thing ever, or that they should avoid the word. I had one guy when I was in college that used to, like, beat himself up when he said colors around me. Like, he'd say, well, the guy had a green... Oh, man. Oh, Brett. I'm so sorry, man. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
And he'd spend the next 5 minutes apologizing, you know?
You know, I was actually taught in college to not use the word see in phrases.
Really?
Yeah. And at the time, I thought, oh, that's kind of odd. Now, married to a blind man, of course, I'm like, yeah, whatever.
That's
it's okay
so
to say, see you later.
So that's funny. They actually told you that.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Wow. You know, here's another dumb one I got, since we're on the subject of dumb things people have said to you. So I dated a girl one time, and my parents, you know, they make pretty decent money with the you know, professions they have. So I was telling her what it was that my parents did, and she stops and she goes, but you're blind. And I thought, well, and now I will throw out there, too, they're in the medical field. So I said, are you saying that you figure because they're in the medical field that I would have top-of-the-line care and I wouldn't be blind? Is that what you're saying? And hers was even dumber than that. She said, no, I just assumed that only people with disabilities are from low-income families.
What?
Wow. She went to a whole new...
Oh, yeah, that was a curveball for me.
Level of, like, what?
Yep.
Definitely never heard that one.
Might actually make me speechless for a few seconds. Just, if you know me, you know that's quite remarkable.
What?
That's crazy. Hey, John, do you remember that time that we were eating out in San Francisco?
Obviously it is.
It's one of my worst stories.
Oh, do tell.
And I've heard other people go through this, but we had a really miserable day trying to find this particular restaurant. We ended up having to have her sister and brother-in-law come find us and take us to where we wanted to go.
Fisherman's Wharf. I don't drive well, and we were in Fisherman's Wharf. Just say it.
And it's just, and they're not, you would think the wharfs are all lined up in numerical order. They're not. So we finally get to the restaurant, and the waiter comes and takes our order, and he doesn't ask me what I wanted. He asked Emily what I wanted. And I immediately knew there was a major problem. And I think I, after this happened once or twice, I think I tried to, because my vision, I tend to look sideways at things and not look at people directly. And I tried to face him as best I could and say, please ask me your questions. And that kind of unbalanced him a little bit. And it kind of continued like that. And then finally at the end of dinner, he, I guess he felt bad enough that he hadn't done the politically correct thing that we ended up getting a nice pen from the restaurant or something. But he addressed, and this has happened to me before a few times, where people will ask someone who's with me what I want or what I need, as though I'm incapable of answering for myself. And that's actually a pretty common thing that happens with a lot of wine people.
Well, here was one that was similar to that with me. I was over here at the Wiener Schnitzel with my assistant here from work, and we're eating and everything, and this old guy walks up to my assistant real quietly and says, can I talk to your friend? And we both heard him, but I think we just wanted him to repeat himself, so we go, excuse us? You know, and so then he says it again. He goes, real timid and tentative, can I talk to your friend? And I said, oh, look, man, if you want to talk to me, you can talk directly to me. You don't need to ask permission to talk to me. And you don't need to. Well, as soon as he did that, then when he opened up, oh, well, I just want to say it's great you're getting out. You know, there's a lot of that, too, where, you know, the self-important, you know, it's good you're doing something with yourself, buddy, you know, or something.
You're being functional.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I was told that once, too. You know, you're a very high-functioning blind person. I'm like, well, thanks a lot. You know, what am I going to do with that? You know,
like, yeah,
or then there's the Me Tours, too. You know, my mother was blind. Well, great. You want a cookie? So, you know, there's a lot of that, and you have to kind of correct. But it's funny because they treat you so, disabledly, I guess the word is, you know. It's like, well, if you had a family member that was disabled, if you really did, then did you treat them that way too? Were you that demeaning to them?
Sadly, the answer would often be yes if they were honest.
I think you're right. Yeah, that's what's so crazy.
But we're really fortunate though, because we grew up in a time, in a setting where having a disability was no excuse to that we could use to keep from doing what we were, what everyone else was expected to do. If I didn't, you know, we used to, Brett and I went to a camp for the blind in Southern California for quite a few summers. And if you didn't know how to swim, they were throwing you in the deep end and you were going to learn to swim. If you didn't know how to get dressed, they were going to teach you that, because their blindness was no excuse to keep from doing what everyone else would be expected to do at that same age. And we were held to the same standard as everyone else. I think that's a large part of why Brett and I are so independent and self-sufficient, because we were pushed to be that way.
Well, and let's tell them the contrast of how we worked at camp and we saw differently. You know what I mean? It was a whole different vibe.
Yeah, I went back and worked in 2006, and a lot of the campers were pretty good at being self-sufficient, but a lot of them were not. And it made me, it was very disappointing. And I would take it upon myself to push them. One kid that I worked with in my group was 15 years old, and he wanted me to take him, oh, maybe 50, 60 feet from the slab to the restrooms in the dining hall. And I said, you're capable of doing that yourself. You have the cane skills. You know where to go. And I will follow a few feet behind. And if you get stuck or turned around or lost, just holler out and I'll be right there. But you can do it yourself. And that's how you teach blind kids to be independent, so that they can grow up to be independent adults.
Yep. Or they don't fix the other thing I noticed, they wouldn't correct blindisms either. A blindism would be like rocking, jamming your finger in your eye, talking to yourself, you know, things like that you might see some blind kids doing. And when I worked there, it was 99, and I saw it wasn't the same. They really coddled these kids, and kids would rock back and forth. Because I remember, boy, when I used to rock, you know, John and I had this teacher, his name was Andy McElberg, and he was great, awesome teacher. I mean, he's the reason we are the way we are, but I mean, he'd correct us right away. I mean, you know, if I start rocking, he'd put his hand behind me. Don't rock, Brett. Don't rock. You know, so he was on it. you know. Mm-hmm. So we gotta give him props for that, you know.
Can you explain why the rocking often occurs?
I don't know.
The best explanation I've heard is that for someone who has no vision, especially young kids, that the rocking back and forth is sort of a way of them feeling like that's where their center of gravity is.
Yeah, feeling where they are in space.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Now, for me, like when I listen to music, I will rock. I'm not going to lie. And other
we all do.
Well, the reason being, and see, for me, I wish I could be able to, you know, get in the car and play a song you like or something, and then press the gas and just take off, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think we miss that, you know, not being able to do that. So it's kind of a same control thing, you know, where all of a sudden your song comes on, you're like really into it, like yeah, you know, and just rocking out, you know.
Literally, so,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's been my interpretation of it, I guess, if I really had to. But I've heard some weird ones, you know, something about the light and the stimulation. But now if you're like myself and you have no light perception, then that throws that thing right out the window. You know what I mean?
So we've talked a lot about, you know, the dumb things that happen, that people say or do, but what are we supposed to do? What are we supposed to say? How are we supposed to come up and talk to you?
Well, how are you supposed to talk to everybody else?
Right, exactly.
Yep. You know? So just the way you would talk to anyone, you know, like we're talking right now, is how you would talk and converse with someone blind, and there's no handbook, you know, per se. You know, you don't have to touch someone when you're talking to them to reassure them that you're standing there. We already know. We can hear you. We can smell you, you know, in some cases.
I would say the number one starting point is don't assume that we can't. Assume that we can. And if we're unable to do something, we will let you know. But otherwise, assume we can, and you'll usually be right. The appropriate thing for the waiter to have done was to assume that I'm capable of telling him what I wanted for lunch. And if I had been unable to, I would have said, she'll answer for me.
Well, you know, the fact that it was funny going back to that is that he didn't correct himself. You know what I'm saying? Like, from what you said, it seemed like he was uneasy, and then rather than fixing the behavior...
Disappeared with a pen, yeah.
Yeah, he kind of, here's a pen,
right?
Blind guy, don't put it in your mouth.
Kind of like, yeah.
Didn't, yeah.
A little bit of... Oh, let's give the blind man a pen.
Oh, boy.
We've become so hypersensitive. I think as a society, we've become so hypersensitive to trying not to offend or trying not to step on people's feelings that we're actually going backwards. And I see this with the young generation of blind and low vision kids that Emily has tried to work with in the recent past, is that we don't hold them to that same standard that Brett and I were held to. And it actually makes them less able to function as they get older and come into society. And you create the very ineptitude that that people think Brett and I are part of.
Mm.
So you're helping to bring about a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, they'll never do this. You know, I love parents that, you know, I went to a group one time and we called it the Table of Crying Moms. Because they would all start talking about their kids that were disabled, and then somehow they just would start crying about, and he'll never do this, and he'll never have a job, and or she'll never work, and or have kids, or you know, and you're just going, my God, you know, tell me something that your kids do well, you know, instead of what they won't do all the time. And there's a lot of parents, is you know, the kid can't do this, can't, favorite word, you know, and really it's like, you know,
our fourth grade teacher had.
Oh.
An absolute curfew or forbid the word can't in his classroom. That was forbidden to use that word.
You had to write it if you said can't. I think it was having a hard time. Is that what he used to want us to say?
Yeah, well, he wanted us to say, I am unable to.
Unable to or having a hard time to. Or something
and
like
then,
that.
Because I remember him teaching this to our class. If you phrase it to yourself that way, I am unable to, sometimes you'll realize you really are able to.
Right, yeah.
It's kind of... Yeah, kind of. Oh, and here's another thing. I want to do this for the well, anyone who's thinking about dating a blind person. And I'll just say this from my standpoint as a male to the women. But if you're here's the thing. Here's the big, and don't worry. I'll say big turn on, but I'm not. What I mean by that is the biggest turn on for me is when you don't think of me as a blind person, and every question every 5 minutes isn't about how do you do this and how do you do that and how do you function. When somebody already comes in knowing this stuff and doesn't have to ask questions, that to me is the biggest, you know, for the women that I've always been really into, that's always been the thing that caught me about them, is they didn't see me as a blind person. They just saw me as a person who happened to be blind.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's something Emily taught me after we got married, was, I would say, an autistic child. No. It's a child with autism. There is a difference. And she taught me about putting the person first and not the disability first.
Oh, people first. Yeah, they could.
People, that's it.
Person,
that's
first
it.
Language, yeah. We were actually having a discussion about that a little bit, too.
We were.
And how it just really depends on the individual, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to rip your throat out if you say, you know, you're a blind person. I am not a blind person. I'm a person who happens to be blind.
Yeah. You know, honestly, we have better, more important battles to fight.
Exactly. Yeah. It's more, you know, for me, it's like, oh, how do you actually talk to me in other ways? You know, it's if you're speaking to me in certain ways or mm-hmm. treating me a certain way, that's where I'm going to get offended, as opposed to if you called me something, I'm not going to, you know, go... You know, and that's the thing too. You'll see people fishing for the right words. So, how long have you been sight challenged? Okay, it doesn't have to be that major. How long have I been blind? There we go.
Right. Well, you know, and the conversation that we were having is that it has come up more. Autistic people have come out and said, no, I want to be called autistic.
Because it's not a disease or anything, or this like ball and chain I'm dragging around. It's who I am, literally, you know, that's not a bad thing.
Right, right.
But getting back to what, you know, what you do when interacting with blind people is assume that we can, and ask, you know, asking questions is perfectly fine. I mean, you have to have some way of getting the information you don't currently have. But try to do it in a way that doesn't insult our intelligence.
Yep.
Assuming that Emily here was, or assuming that I was unable to put my own order in at the restaurant, is insulting my intelligence.
Well, and it's already got assumption behind it. So why would you ask a question if you know the answer to it? You know, so in their mind, if they think they already know, then why would you ask that question?
When I was going through mobility training years ago, post high school, one of my mobility instructor put me at the corner of one of the busiest intersections in town, and I had to go around 8 times in one direction clockwise and 8 times around in the other direction. And on foot with my cane, had to learn how, you know, when the appropriate time to step out in the street and cross was. And some kid that was catching a bus, actually, he came up to me and I really liked his approach. He didn't just grab me and take me across. He kind of put his hand on me and he said, would you like some assistance? And that gave me the option to say yes or no. And I took him up on it, even though my instructor wasn't particularly, you're supposed to be doing this yourself. But I thought, I'll indulge this guy because he's trying to be helpful. He's trying to be nice. But and by asking me, giving me the option, he was assuming that I was capable of doing it on my own if I said no. So that's an example of how to appropriately approach a blind person if you think they're in need of help.
Yep, just ask. That's all you got to do. There's nothing wrong with asking, like, would you like some help? You know, and that to me is more so than just, like John was saying, coming up and just grabbing you and pulling you somewhere, and you're going, well, where are we going? You know, what is this a kid?
Who are you, and why are you doing this?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and there was one way, I went to go speak at a in-home care place one time. And the way this woman, I wish there was video here with this podcast, because I would love to show you guys how this woman tried to lead me. She basically put her arm through my arm, put her hand behind my head, and was kind of like trying to carry me. Oh, so I said, let me correct her right now. And I said, okay, no. This is what you do. I had to take her hand and then grab her elbow and say, okay, now you walk and I will walk with you. You know. But I'm just going, man, this is an in-home care place. So does this woman do this to the people that are visually impaired that she works with? Mm-hmm. You know, like,
did somebody tell you to do it like this?
Yeah, where did you learn that?
Yeah. You know, did you just think that was a good thing to do?
Well, and from Emily just opened my eyes here to the fact that, you know, with they tell you not to say C to blind people in school and stuff. So what other wacky stuff are they teaching you in those schools now and colleges and things, you know?
something that I was thinking about is a conversation that John and I have had in the past where you talk about going into social settings and how challenging it is to strike up conversations. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, it can be. You know, it depends on where you're at. Usually people kind of have to warm up to us because a lot of sight, in those situations, it's a lot of visual gestures and looking and seeing, you know, hey, look, that person wants to talk to me, or they look like they'd be interested in talking. So, you know, yeah, you're kind of stuck unless somebody comes over and engages you, you know. Now, I've kind of gotten in the thing lately where I go to bars by myself. And a lot of times people are just kind of social anyway there. So they will start talking to you. But if somebody will not strike up a conversation with me, and there's even if they're sitting right next to me, then I'm not going to bother them, you know. So, yeah, it can be difficult if somebody will not come over and engage you. So they really do have to engage us to you know.
Well, if you stop and think about it, I mean, think about when you go to a party. And, it's, you know, with the church that Emily and I go to, there's a lot of social functions where there's 60, 80, 100, even more people in a room. And when you think about being in a social setting like that, the standard operating procedure is you walk into a room, you pick your table, and you see Margie over there. I don't know, I haven't seen her in a while. I'm going to go talk to her. And while you're talking to her, someone else will come up after a minute and a half, 2 minutes, and talk to you. And Margie goes off and talks to somebody else. And it's this constant movement of people around based on who's there and how well you can see them. Blind people can't engage that way. So we go and sit at our table and wait for someone to come find us, because we're not able to really get up and look around and find them. And it makes social settings, depending on who's there, it makes social settings very uncomfortable, because we don't have a lot to do except pick at our plate and hope someone comes up and says hi.
And play with your phone or something, you know. Like, yeah, I'm just playing with my phone.
So I personally, especially outside of church activities, I tend to avoid the social gatherings if it's not with either church members or family members. And even in those settings, it's still awkward.
See, now with my job, sometimes I have to do those, because I'll go to like these senior networking events, things like, you know, the Spotlight Senior Services Breakfast or something. And it's really helpful to go with my assistant. I actually have an assistant that works with me that's a temp. He works 25 hours a week. But I always like to drag him with me, because this way he can engage people. And so I kind of use him for that, you know. But if I go by myself, yeah, then sometimes if people don't come up and talk to me, I'm just kind of sitting in a corner by myself with my food and they're kind of waiting, you know, for someone to come up.
You know, and it's not that they're doing anything wrong. It's just that they don't know anything else. Most people with regular vision, sighted people, Brett and I call them, sighties. They don't know any other way. Yeah. And so if you happen to be in a room with someone that, if you see a cane, or a dog under the table, go engage them. Sit at their table for a few minutes. And if you're going to get up and go talk to someone, let them know that's what you're doing. Hey, my friend just showed up. I'm going to go talk to them for a bit. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Yeah, because it's noisy and you don't always hear if they get up or leave, you know, so you might be talking.
And my friend Butch, that's a good deal older than me, he's also been totally blind since birth, is fond of telling me of times in the past when he has gone to social functions. He's sitting there talking to someone, and someone else will come up and say, "Who are you talking to? That person's not sitting there anymore."
Wow.
And he's like, "I'm 67 years old. No wonder I don't go to social things anymore."
I get, yeah, if people are that rude, they just jump up and leave.
Yeah, leave mid-conversation.
Like, okay. Yeah, and I've done it before. Or somebody will say something, you know, next to me. I'm thinking they're talking to me, and they're talking to some person that's near me, nearby. I've done that before, too.
So, what is the biggest thing you want listeners to take away from this episode?
Well, like I said earlier, the assuming, you know, it's okay to ask questions, but don't assume you know the answer already. Because the minute you assume, then that's a tough question. You know, that's obviously not a question that you think you know it already. So that's the one thing. And then the thing I was telling you earlier about the dating, you know, for if you're interested in someone blind, you know, talking about their blindness, you know, isn't the main topic of conversation. You're actually probably going to turn that person off if you do that.
You know, for the sighted person that dates the blind person, Emily and I, when we started dating, there weren't a whole lot of, can you do this? How do you do that? It just comes up in the course of conversation and hanging out with each other. Oh, that's really cool. How do you do that? You know, either learn by observing how they do things, or there will be appropriate times to ask innocent passing questions. What I think I'd like listeners to take away is, you know, for guys like Brett and I think most blind people in general, is that we, for the most part, I think we have a drive to be as independent and self-sufficient as possible. I've been, you know, now I stay home and I raise three little girls. Well,
three,
two.
Whoa.
We'll have to edit that out.
Unless you have a dog or something.
I guess I was thinking of my three girls, including Emily. You know, I'm a stay-at-home dad now, and I, you know, maintain a house, and we have amazing food, by the way.
We do have amazing
food. I've been through a culinary program, a very rigorous, demanding culinary program, and come through on top. And I've worked in professional kitchens before. So I am able to do things independently. There's very precious little that I am unable to do for myself, either because I've taught myself how to do it or with the assistance of technology. So my big thing is assume that we can, and you'll almost always be correct in your assumption.
Folks, thanks so much for listening to Forget Dis. This has been a really amazing discussion with Brett and John. They both mentioned earlier how much they rely on other people to come up and engage with them. So hopefully the things that we've talked about today might be able to remove some of the hesitation or uncertainty that any of you have had in engaging with people with vision impairment that might be in your circle. And hey, if any of you are guilty of doing some of the things that they mentioned that are offensive, then hey, we're not judging. You got to learn from somewhere, but take a step back. Think about it. Think about how your words and your actions affect the people around you. I just want to add one more thing. When we do engage with that, come up and just say your name. It's pretty hard to be able to tell who's talking to them just from a, hey. So just think back to phone etiquette, pre-caller ID. Hey, Brett, this is Emily. And then continue on with your conversation. Just something to keep note of. Another note that I wanted to bring up, we talked a little bit about people first language and how some people prefer to actually go with person-centered language. Right now, and for many years, people first language has been the accepted vernacular, especially in professional circles. That's when you say a person with autism or someone who is blind versus a blind person or an autistic person. And generally, that's the way that we go so that we focus on the person and not the disability. There are other people lately that have come out and said, no, I want to be called autistic. That's who I am. And what they've called person-centered language. So what Kayla and I have discussed in the past and decided is that it's probably a good idea to go with our default person-first language and say a person with autism unless we are otherwise directed to. Just be really respectful in that. Again, this has been a really amazing conversation, and I hope that you've enjoyed it as much as we have. Our next episode is going to be in 2 weeks. We're going to be talking about music therapy and cognition and referencing some really specific examples on how that works. We're going to meet Kevin, who has been a music therapy client for a while, and he's willing to share some of his stories and some of his successes in that. He also happens to have a vision impairment, so it's a nice, interesting little tie there. Until next time, this has been Forget Dis.